Hello, and happy early spring to the lucky Asymptote listeners who are living in the parts of the world which are already starting to bloom. For everyone else, please hang in there. Warmer weather is on its way, and I hope you will take the time to look for even the smallest beginnings of it. The barely noticeable buds creeping out from the tips of branches, or perhaps some harder-to-miss gangs of loud birds who might be bullying their way into your auditory landscape. But before we dive all the way in, I'd like to just take one moment and make sure people know about an important project taking place at Asymptote and a time-sensitive call for action. In response to the United States' unjust travel ban on 7 countries, which has left many families in terrible limbo, we are organizing a special issue to feature work from those countries. After an amazing show of support, we've decided there will be a mini special feature at The Guardian and in our April 2017 spring edition. But there is still time for donation, and any additional help will allow us to make this special feature even more amazing. Or, put a bit more eloquently by the mesmerizing Jan Martel, the best weapon against fear and hatred is knowledge, and the best knowledge is literary knowledge, that is, knowledge from the heart refined by the mind. Asymptote's showcase of writers from the 7 countries picked on by President Trump will be the best inoculation against his distorted and distorting thinking. Now, this is also really excellent news for all authors and translators of Iranian, Iraqi, Libyan, Somalian, Sudanese, Syrian, and Yemeni literature. If you translate or work from any of these languages, please go to asymptote.com and see our call for submissions. The deadline for this paid opportunity is rapidly approaching on March 15th. Please help spread the word and submit your work and translations. Now, back to spring and transplants of a different kind. Those birds you heard just there were making the rounds in Madrid's Jardín Botánico, the botanical garden which rests just south of the Prado Museum and north of the Atocha train station. Somehow, during the few years that I have spent now in Spain, I had never actually set foot within the walls of these gardens. But in the past couple weeks, I have been over a dozen times and was shocked by how much change I could see in what I thought was such a small span of time. While I was still bundled up in my coat, buds of deep cherry and plum were insisting out of tiny bonsais and towering elms alike, and instantly gave me hope that I would be hanging up my coat soon. And the next week, as I continued to make visits, a few trees here and there, most notably an incredibly smelling almond tree with soft pink and white flowers, burst into bloom, despite temperatures which were still dropping low. The inspiration for these visits came in the form of an artist, Lauren Moya Ford, whom I met by chance in Houston, Texas, though we discovered that we actually grew up not too far from one another in our hometown of Austin. These past few weeks, before and after my introduction to the gardens, I've been carrying around and reading her well-loved and annotated copy of W.G. Siebold's Austerlitz, translated by Anthea Bell. It has been one of those novels which I cannot believe I am reading for the first time. It begins so simply, yet addictively. In the second half of the 1960s, I traveled repeatedly from England to Belgium, partly for study purposes, partly for other reasons which were never entirely clear to me. This and its mix of images and texts speaks to Ford's own proclivities to mixed media. Over the years, our paths have kept crossing until we are now living again in the same city, only thousands of miles from our original meeting place. Lauren Moya Ford is a Tex-Mex visual artist, though her work is quickly spreading into text and other genres. Part of my fascination with her practice is this dynamic hybridity and this willingness to leap across more traditional boundaries. After insisting I be introduced to the Botanic Gardens, she shared with me some of their history and how and why these threads of botany were getting woven into her artistic works. We talked about a plant being transplanted from one place to another and how they did not always make it, just as texts translated from one place to another can also lack what they need to thrive. Artworks, too, need care when being moved from one context to another, just as authors, when they pick up and move into another language which is not their own, often change irrevocably. Ford writes, 138 years ago, they forged this glass garden house against the bitter white cold that hovers over the nation for so long. The people of the city wanted to see for themselves what tropical green bodies grew so far away, in places where not even iron reached. I had remembered some installation pieces which incorporated huge palm leaves, but this was something more. This had become an obsession. After falling into the invention of nature by the German author Andrea Wolf, Ford is now exploring the brother gardeners by the same author and going back in time into the histories of the movements of these different plants and their sometimes eccentric keepers. I have also been obsessed by books on botany from John McVie's Oranges to the more recent The Land Where Lemons Grow by Helena Adley. But for me, these fonts of information remain somewhat separate from my own work. Perhaps that is why I was so fascinated to read and then hear Ford's new pieces. You might call them poems, as they were folding in this knowledge around images and text. A full sense of the pieces is gained in conjunction with photographic images taken with different kinds of film, but Ford's words also paint their own picture of memory and longing. And what has obsessed me even more is the element which is a constant spark of wonder, that of taking a leap into composing work in a language which was not yours originally. In addition to Spanish, which she also translates from, Ford has been teaching herself Portuguese and making trips to Oporto to participate in art events, and this piece was composed for Ink Livros.
Recordações. 1. Convocação. Quem és tu? Foi a primeira coisa que eu aprendi a dizer na língua falada lá. Para isso, pergunta-se literalmente. E tu? De quem vens sendo? 2. O palmbucet. Tuas mãos estavam a tocar na base de uma palmeira velha. Pedi que ele colocasse a sua palma ali, como a minha. Antes de nós, muitos xamãs tinham gravado os seus nomes naquele tronco, mas nós não o fizemos. 138 anos atrás, forjaram esta casa de jardim de vidro contra o frio branco e amargo que paira sobre a nação há tanto tempo. O povo da cidade queria ver por si mesmo quais corpos verdes tropicais cresciam tão longe, em lugares onde nem mesmo o ferro deles alcançava. A sua mãe veio do meu país há décadas atrás para dançar o resto da sua vida naquele lugar de língua afiada. Ela levou-me para a antiga casa de banhos, construída para os trabalhadores no século XVII. Damos círculos vertiginosos debaixo de uma enorme mural de uma batalha marítima. Ela via algo de si mesma a mim, disse, e pediu-me para desenhar um retrato do seu filho. Eu disse-lhe a verdade, que pararia odiar o seu rosto para sempre. 3. A figa. Eu vim para o lugar onde iria viver e rapidamente tive meu coração partido. Talvez eu própria o quebrara. Para dentro do espaço onde tudo se soltava, vou uma correria de florestas de eucalipto, autoestradas escondidas na neblina, paredes de granito com água jorrando, costas costeiras e flores silvestres amarelas. Notei manchas coloridas de ácido nas suas hidranjas, chamadas Hortência lá, que é o nome da minha avó. Era como se alguém tivesse lançado um feitiço em todas as flores e sobre toda a terra úmida e fértil. Os cenários da região foram capturados dentro de uma névoa espessa, com um cheiro a perfume pagão e celta. cruzes de pedra altas colocadas nas encruzilhadas das aldeias e punhos pretos esculpidos nos pescoços dos bebês sussurravam feitiçaria. Vi este sinal repetidamente. Um punho fechado, preto, com o pulgar prendido firmemente entre os dedos do índice e do meio. É uma proteção contra maldições, diziam eles. Desde que a vi, noto que as minhas mãos estão quase sempre na mesma posição quando eu acordo. Do que me protejo? 4. A festa dos maios. Parecia que nunca mais, mas a primavera finalmente chega. E então procuro flores em todos os lados. Ramos são colocados em cestos ou apertados numa mão embevecida. Montes de flores silvestres são arrancados da montanha para um rito de primavera. Os corpos das crianças estão cobertos de ramos verdes escuros. Os adultos apertam flores em forma de estrela nas cintas das crianças, debaixo dos braços, entre os seus ombros e empilhados em cima de suas cabeças. Eu adorno os corpos das crianças também e vejo que eles são flores e que cada um deles está prestes a florescer em anos mais longos de vida. Depois de todas as flores se moverem da terra para os corpos dos jovens, as pessoas plantas vão para a aldeia e cantam. Vejo jarros brancos maiores que a cabeça de uma criança. Camélias a cair no chão em tantas tonalidades de rosa. E pequenas pétalas brancas de flores de cerejeira escorregando pelos cabelos do menino. Estou paralisada. Estou impressionada com as flores do velho mundo, tantas que nunca vi antes e que nunca mais verei. 5. O mar. Quando nasci, a minha mãe levava-me ao oceano à noite para ouvir o mar. Foi assim que eu aprendi a dormir. O mar é uma coleção de segundos e milhões de anos, cheios de areia e ossos e bolhas e ganchos e espinhos e dentes e liso. Só Deus pode conhecer tudo dentro dela. O mar é como o rosto de uma amante. Podes olhar para ele para sempre e nunca ver o suficiente. Nunca serás completa. Eu cruzava a água cada dia, sempre olhando para o oeste, pensando: eu sou de lá, meu povo está lá, os lugares que eu conheço estão lá, lá. Linha do horizonte impossível, área impossível onde a água desliza imperceptivelmente para trás e volta para o lugar onde eu nasci. E é sempre o mar entre os dois.
Taking her own words into a foreign language not only forced her to examine each word more carefully, but it opened up new sounds and auditory architecture, which was well worth the maze of such unfamiliar territory. We discussed a new project, also working in conjunction with images from the gardens, which Ford is also composing bilingually in Spanish. This piece too holds memory with image and plays with the idea of the transplant of memories trying to transplant themselves into the present and future as they are called up by different images.
Into a garden. The first novel I ever read was called The Secret Garden. It is about a girl who comes from far away and finds her life in a garden. I looked at the pictures in the book over and over. I'd never seen a garden before, and the images floated in my mind for years afterwards. I go to the botanical garden as soon as I reach the city. The sun is dropping slowly, and its thin light grazes the plants and paths. I look at the soft geometry of greens until a patch of dahlia stops me. My heart wrenches at the sight of the flower's dewy faces, which are the size of loose fists and dinner plates. 200 years ago, the director of this garden named the flowers after a Swedish botanist. Long before that, the flower's roots were eaten and its long, hollow stalks were used to carry water in Mexico. That's where I fell in love with someone who was from the place of the dahlia's name. We came together at the ruins of Tenochtitlan on New Year's Day. Afterwards, I looked up at the yellow mesquite flowers swaying above us, believing that we'd been sealed to each other by the buzzing bugs, tiny leaves, and the residue of old gods. Later, I'd go to his homeland and see dahlias blooming bright but stoic against the cold, a botanical experiment that seemed cruel so far north. But here, it's late summer, and this is my new home. The flowers and fronds inside the garden's greenhouse are a blur of dark, dripping silhouettes. Orchids, bromeliads, palms, and vines belong in another hemisphere, but here they are, filling the room like a heavy perfume. The air is thick and wet. I feel as if I'm wrapped in a cloud. The hiss of sprinklers is followed by silence. I see a figure emerging slowly from the mist. She is wearing all white, with a large wooden cross hanging over her chest. My first teachers wore that cross, too. We tended vegetable patches and chickens at their schoolhouse, and every day after lunch we sang while one of the sisters played her guitar. We took walks in the country, watching the wildflowers that appeared with each week in spring. As if she already knows all of this, the nun floats by, smiling. As soon as she passes, the haze dissipates.
I cannot help but think of Austerlitz again and his obsessions, and how those stories in turn must become the obsessions of the narrator, about how they both make themselves into some species of perpetual transplants, seeing the world through constantly foreign eyes. I remember learning many of the English names for native Texas plants, only to discover here in Spain that they must have been only native since the 15th and 16th centuries, as they have their original roots here in Spain. In these botanical gardens, the plaques talk of plants of Quixote and illustrate figs and grapevines, which originally spread throughout his text and now across other continents as well. And I can't help but wonder what new transplants might take hold as people continue this necessary stepping across borders. I hope for spring wherever those roots are taking hold. Signing off.
This is Leila Benitez-James for the Asymptote Podcast.